I have Shmora, but I didn't eat it. Closed box, oh, yeah, 2 pounds still.
You know, you're saving it for next year.
No, I have too much. I've ordered 8 pounds.
Okay, good evening, gentlemen. We continue Gemara Makis. This is our sixth class. We're on Gimel Amid Beis, about in the middle of the page. We're going to be starting with the words, first word on the line, Ve Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel. If you're looking in the regular Gemara, I'd say it's about 20 lines from the top. It's before the middle set of wide lines. In your art scroll, probably 3B2.
Yeah, right at the top.
Right at the top? Yeah. Okay, if you got a regular Gemara, it's the first word on the line. Ve Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel. Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel made the first statement right after the Mishnah about if you lend a friend money over 10 years, if Shemitah knocks it off or not. Two different versions. Does it knock it off? Does it not knock it off? Not related back to the Mishnah. So now Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel is going to make another statement. And while we're on the topic of Shemitah, we'll continue on the topic of Shemitah for a while. We've sort of drifted away from Eidim Zomimim, and we are going to all the way to the next Mishnah stay away from Eidim Zomimim. Until the next Mishnah, we'll come back to Eidim Zomimim. So we're going to go from topic to topic here today. Okay, we're all starting together?
Yeah.
If a person says to a friend, I'm going to lend you money, almanas shelo tashmeteni shvis, on the condition that Shemitah will not push me off. That's what he says. So, guess what the law is? Shvis mishametes. Shemitah knocks him off.
You now, can't contract out of Shemitah.
You've got, the guy does not have to pay the debt. The guy knew Shemitah was coming. He says, I know Shemitah's coming, but I'm making up with you separate thing. I'm saying, you know what? I'm only going to lend you if you agree that Shemitah is not going to interfere and I can just take.
No,
guy says, okay, shake on it, fine. Guy comes in with Shemitah, guys, ha ha, it's Shemitah.
What kind of a deal is that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it says. So now let us see what's going on over here. So Lema, let's say, what do we see from this statement? Remember, Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Kesover Shmuel, Masna Alma Shekasuv Batorahu. The guy has made a masna, made a condition on that which is written in the Torah. V'chol ha-masna Alma Shekasuv Batorah, and anyone who makes a condition on that which is written in the Torah, to Nahu Batel, the condition is nullified. So now let's explain this statement over, because it has to be understood on a deeper level. Now, in a minute, they're going to bring a machlokas about this. So the question is, how can you have a machlokas about this? This is a rule. In other words, there is a rule. If you make a condition upon what is written in the Torah, then your condition is not true. You can't make any conditions contrary to the Torah. Now, nobody argues on that rule. However, there is an argument in one area of this, and that is regarding money. Whereas, if you're going to make a condition, I'm going to ask a condition that you don't wear tzitzis. Well, you can't make kids do that because God says you got to wear tzitzis every day, and it's not your business to mishmaran in God's Torah. Can't change that. But when we're dealing with money areas, we can say, well, listen, it's a money issue. Okay, I agree the Torah says Shemitah knocks it off, but you know, if we both agree that Shemitah shouldn't knock it off, then it's only a monetary issue between me and you. And a monetary issue, it's personal between me and you, so then maybe that's where there's room for machlokas. If it's between you and God, okay, you can't make conditions, you know, when God says you can't, now the whole point of Shemitah is to safeguard the borrower. Or to equalize, or whatever. Guy said, listen, I know the Shemitah thing, but I'm telling you right now, I ain't lending you if I got Shemitah problems here. Okay? So you know what? Are you at least willing to forego this thing in terms of money issues? So there's a machlokes if you can make a condition in this one detail of what's written in the Torah. So when it regards to money. So it would appear that Shmuel would say, that the reason Shemitah knocks him off, because even in this area, he would say that's considered making kiddush against what's written in the Torah, and therefore the condition would be nullified. That's what we would think that Shmuel has said. Mm-hmm. But there's a problem, because we're going to have a statement of Shmuel that seems to contradict it. Itmar, but we learned somewhere else. Ha'omer lechavero. If a guy makes a deal with another fellow, and this is a little bit different, he says, I'm selling you a 2008 Sienna. Amenah she'en olai ono. And I'm making this deal on the condition that you will have no complaints that I will have cheated you later on. There is a halacha that if a person really cheats a guy in a deal, there's an idea called ono. Let's say if you overcharge him ridiculously too much, the guy can go to court and say, this guy robbed me blind. Okay, I don't want to get into how much and this and that, but that's called ono. And that's a biblical thing. You can't overcharge people. You go to the store and the guy says, what's the cost? You buy it, you go home, you say, your wife says, how can you pay so much money for it? That's what he charged. I think it's ono. Go to the business. Says, yeah, I paid $105,000 for a 2008 Sienna.
No such thing as carried empty.
They said, you know, I think you paid a little too much. Let's call the guy in there, right? So there is such a concept. So the guy says, I'll tell you, I'll sell you the Sienna. It's a great deal, but I'm telling you right now, I'm giving you for a great steal. It's $105,000. But I'm making this deal on one condition. On one condition that there's no ono going to apply to this sale. Okay? So now, what's the halacha? Well, there's a machlokes. Now again, ono means cheating, to be considered price what? Fraud? Price fraud? Okay, price fraud. Price fraud. He said there's no laws of price fraud here. Now again, that is a Torah concept. But again, it's only regarding money. So now, well, let's see what happens over. So Rav Omar, Rav says, yesh lo olav ono. There is price fraud here, and you can nullify the deal. Shmuel Amar ain't lo olav ono. Shmuel says we do not invoke the price fraud, and the deal stands.
Huh.
So now, what is that? That's a contradiction in Shmuel, because the first statement we started tonight off with was Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel said, if the guy says I'm going to lend you on the money on the condition that Shemitah will not nullify the sale, the loan, we say too bad. Shemitah nullifies. You can't make a condition on what's written in the Torah, even in monetary issues. And now, in a case where the guy sells it to him, and he says, "I don't want to have any ono," Shmuel says, "There is no ono. The deal stands." So you comes out, you could make a condition against what was written in the
Different
Torah.
Law, though. One has Shemitah, one.
But they're both monetary. It's the same biblical restrictions involved, and they're being, the question is, are they being waived or not? In the first instance, Shmuel says it's not waived, and the deal does not stand. Right, and you don't have to pay back the money. And the second one, it's also biblical restriction. You can't cheat people in business. Same Torah, says he. And you know, but he's saying in monetary issues, you can say that the deal stands. So it's a contradiction. So the answer is ha'itmar Allah. So we learned on this the following: Amar Rav Anan said, "Lididi, to me personally, mefar shalei minei dishmul." Shmuel explained his statement. In this last machlokes, Shmuel clarified to me what he meant when he said it. And now when I'm going to give you the clarification, we're going to find there's no contradiction between the words that he said. Now listen carefully, because there's going to be two statements that sound very similar, but there's a subtle difference, and that's going to make all the difference in the world. So Shmuel said, let me clarify to you what I meant, and what I was speaking about, and what I wasn't speaking about. If the guy says, Al menas she'ein l'cho olai ono, I'm speaking where I'm making the following condition. Ein l'cho olai. You won't come to me with a problem of ono. It's very specific. You won't come to me with a problem of ono. So that's when I said, ein lo olav ono. Then there is ono. That's what I said. But now here's a very similar statement that I wasn't talking about. But what about Amenash She'ein Bo Ono? I'm doing you on the condition that there is no Ono in this deal. I'm telling you that there's no cheating going on in this deal.
It's a representation then.
Right? He's not saying there is no laws of Ono going on here.
I'm not cheating you.
I'm selling you on the condition that there is no Ono over here. Okay? Then he didn't really nullify the laws of onah. So in that case, harei yesh bo onah, there is onah. So what's he trying to show? He's trying to say, you know, there could be two kinds of statements made. One is a statement that we will say the onah doesn't stand, because he's keeping it between him and the guy, mamish. The other one is more of a global statement or truth, let's say, is I'm making this deal on the condition that there's just no onah here. I'm telling you, there's no onah here. That's how Rashi learns it. And we'll just leave it with Rashi. So that's a subtle difference. So how that help us? Well, if that's what he said regarding that discussion, so let's go back to what he said about by Shemitah.
So on that second clause, he would
agree there is onah.
Right.
So now let's go back to the Shemitah one, and maybe we can also finagle the same thing and come up with two similar statements, but are still a little different. So Hachinami, let's say the same thing upstairs. If you say Almenas Shalo Tishmateni Bishvis, I'm going to lend this to you on the condition that you will not invoke that the Shemitah will knock me off between me and you personally. Ain Shvis Misham Tussle. Then I would even agree that the Shemitah does knock it off. But that's not what I said over there. Over there is that Almenas Shalo Tishmateni Shvis, on the condition that Shemitah doesn't work. That's different. It's the first one saying, I'm going to say, you won't invoke the Shemitah on me.
Right.
That's when the deal will stand. But if I say that I make a decision that Shemitah will not be bearing over here, then Shemitah is Meshamtenos. Shemitah can do that. You know why? Because it's not your Shemitah to say that it gets invoked or not. If you want to say, I make the thing that the laws of Shemitah don't apply. Well, you know, the laws of Shemitah apply. But if I say, I make it, and you won't enforce the Shemitah on it, then he's saying, laws of Shemitah apply. But to me, you don't want to make that happen. Yeah. That's similar to the case before, where he says, if you won't claim any onah on me, if you won't claim any onah. So that's the difference. If it's between me and you, and we keep it between me and you, then Shmuel is saying, then you don't have to follow the Torah rules. So, although in the first statement, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, the guy says, that the Shemitah won't knock it off, he's saying, in general, the Shemitah won't knock it off. Then the Shemitah knocks it off. The statement he said by Onoi says, between me and you, there shouldn't be any Onoi. Then okay, there's no Onoi between you, me and you. And if he would have said back by the Shemitah, between me and you, there isn't any Shemitah, then there is a Shemitah. Right. The point being, you can't take the Torah law and throw the law out the window. But we could say the law's there.
Just massage it.
But me and you, you know, you're going to be Michael me on that
this
law.
It's the one and only exception to
right.
That.
Yeah.
So if this is possible, why did they have to come up with pros bowls and having the based in?
Because we've got a machlokas here. even though Shmuel says that, Rav argues with him. There's a machlokas here, right? Even by Onah, right? We had the machlokas. Rav says there is onah. Shmuel said not.
Rav would say the same thing about Shmuel.
And guess what? We paskin like Rav.
There's the answer.
We paskin like Rav. There's no contradiction in Shmuel. The only thing is, we don't hold like Shmuel. So since you're right, according to Shmuel, he wouldn't need a pruz ball, but we don't hold like Shmuel at the end of the day. Since we don't hold like Shmuel, we need the pruz ball. And that's better, because you're not getting into a machlokas now. Because Pruzbal has nothing to do with the Machlokas. The Bezdin is collecting the. We're not nullifying the mitzvah at all. So therefore, that's why Pruzbal won't
help.
But according to Shmuel, then, this isn't a unique case. Wouldn't any monetary laws that come into place...
According to him, if you want this...
Any monetary laws, you could say, you know what?
Between me and you, according to Shmuel, that's true. But it would appear that Rav doesn't hold like that. Rob, there's no like that. And we don't paskin like that. We don't paskin like Shmuel. So you can't make those off the, you know, silent deals. Can't do that.
It still seems, according to Rob, it still seems, no, sorry, Shmuel, that you are changing the Torah law.
No, the Torah law stands. Torah stands for everybody in the world.
But between us two,
I want you to be moichel me on that. That you're not going to enforce it on me. The law stands. It's a law for everybody else in the world. But you're not going to enforce it. So that's the machlokes. That's the machlokes. Can two consenting adults, you know, and when it comes to monetary issues, remember the whole point is that Torah is trying to protect buyers. It's trying to protect the buyers. That's the point of the law. So I'm saying, okay, I'm moichel on the protection.
That's probably why Rav doesn't like it.
You see, you can't make vows on laws that have nothing to do with the buyer and seller. Right, I'm making a deal with you that you know you will work for me on Shabbos. On the condition you work for me on Shabbos. Yeah, you can't make it. It's not your Shabbos to deal with. But listen, the whole point was to make it easy for you. I ain't going to lend it to you unless you don't hold that against me. If you don't hold the intent of the law against me, I said, we'll lend to you. So the guy says, well, I'd rather you lend me the money than I have nothing. So that's the machlokas. Can you do that or not? Because you're not violating the spirit of the law. So can you do it? So that's the machlokas. At the end of the day, we don't all like him. And then you can't do it. Mm-hmm. But at least we're consistent with Shmuel's statements. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a basic question. You don't have
to okay, fine.
But how do we know who we're holding by? Is it just by tradition?
No, I'm cheating. Because in the regular Shas Gemara, they put a little letter next to the opinion that's the winner. Because it gives you a source.
The hay.
Yeah, that's right. You said the Dalet before... and the hay right? So that's a little hint. It sources you to the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch, and that usually means that's what they're holding. That's a little cheat way, right? If we would have time, we'd look up the Rambam, we'd go through the Shulchan Aruch, and you'd find out that's the law. Okay, continuing on. We're now on...
When were those added, those...
You know, late, it's not later, part of the Talmud per se, it's... The editors who compiled new editions of the Talmud. You have to remember, the original Talmud only had Gemara.
Right.
Right? The original one. Then they added Rashi. It's the publishers. Remember, the publishers have a lot of power. It's all in the publisher's hand. Right? Initially, there was just the Gemara. So people by hand wrote. Can you imagine a guy wrote 60 volumes of the Gemara, right? That was a very precious thing to have. Okay, now they finally get the printing presses. Now the print, but by the time that the printing presses, what year did the printing presses come into?
1650.
Okay, by then you had Rashi's commentary, you had Tosfos, you had the Rambam, you had this. It depended what the printer's discretion was. The printers were not necessarily scholars; they were businessmen. That's also true. So the point being, you know, the fact. Okay, everyone understands you have to have Rashi because Rashi is the bread and butter commentary. But there were some publishers, for example, put Rashi on one side and put the Rambam on the other side. You know, the fact you put Tosfos, I mean, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not criticizing, but Tosfos is one of many medieval scholars. We could have chosen to pick the Rajba, the Ritva, someone else that may have even served us better.
Those publications with them.
Right?
A few
so that was like one age generation. Then a guy figures, you know, as you go further along, then the next part says, well, you know, I think I'm going to add the commentary of the Rabbeinu Chananel at the bottom over here. Then the guy says, you know what? It'd be really nice if people knew how to reference the halachas. They're learning the Gemara. Where are they going to find the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam? So this guy came along and says, you know, whatever relates to halacha, the Rambam, I'll put a little letter there. So the publisher put that in. So he usually puts the letter by the one that we hold like.
Right.
So that, but that's not the Talmud per se. The Talmud Ravina Ravashi didn't put any of that stuff in. All he got was the basic stuff in the middle. Okay.
That's that little tiny letter that's above. That's a little tiny.
Yeah, the Dalet or the Hay.
Even the Aleph there, like on the top there, there's an Aleph with the star and then the base.
Okay,
right
there's all kinds of things. We'll spend another session explaining to you all the little things. It's all referencing something.
Two Alephs.
No, there's one Aleph.
No, there's only one.
An Aleph and a star. Henry, it's a star.
Yeah.
No, here, this
that's a Howard.
This is a star?
Oh, you have a different one than I have.
Yeah, I got an
Aleph. I have a star instead of an Aleph.
Yeah, me too.
So that's referencing another Gemara. A lot of times there'll be stars or letters that will reference another Gemara. All right, don't worry about that. It's
in
a little bit beyond where we're at. But just to end Ken's question, that's how I know how to cheat on the page. Okay. Let's continue. Let's continue. Third wide line. Tana. Okay, we learned the following. This is a Tosefta. So that has the same time of the Tanoim. It says like this. Here's a very fascinating halacha. And I mentioned this before, now this is the source of it. Hamalva es chavero stam. If a person lends someone money, stam. Stam means without any qualifications. He didn't say how long the lending was. Guy said, lend me $1,000 here. Here's $1,000. Didn't say anything about the time frame of paying back. A few weeks passed, the guy's went, oh, I wonder when he's going to pay me back. Guy said, maybe you're going to pay me back. He says, well, you never said when I have to pay you back. I was planning on maybe 5, 6, 7 years, maybe till Shemitah. You know? And I said, no, that doesn't make sense. So now we have to have some rules on the books that tell us. I mean, usually you would say how long it is, and they didn't say. So there's got to be a law telling us, if you didn't say, what is the term? Right? So Gemara says, if you lend without any specific terms, Eina Rashoy Litovo Pachos Milamid Yom. You're not allowed to claim from the guy less than 30 days. In other words, a general lending, the assumption is it's 30 days and not more. That's a statement of the Tosefta without any clarification.
Not less.
It can't be less than 30 days. You can't go to him before 30 days are up. The assumption is it's a 30-day loan at least. And now at 30 days, and 30 days, not at least, 30 days. So now 30 days, 30 days is up, pay me the money. Well, we didn't say, it's a stam loan. Stam loan's 30 days. Now, that's a statement. That's net 30, right?
60, 90.
Right? I don't know. What if you don't say anything? If you make a deal, you don't say anything. Take the guy to court. Believe me, you're not taking them within 30 days. But it was like a net 30. That's a stam is a net 30. You lend the guys, net 30.
Is it a coincidence that that case we dealt with before with the 10 years, they claimed 30 days?
Yeah, I mean, that would, you know, well, it's just using it as an extreme. It didn't have to be 30. It's an extreme.
But it's almost like it was silent, so we said 30 days.
I don't know. I don't know if it has to be. I don't know if it has to be. Anyway, that is the Tosefta without any explanation. Now, the Amoraim are going to now debate exactly what this Mishnah means. Now, Sova Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Rabba, the son of Chana, Kamei Derav, he felt to say in front of Rav, Lameimer to say the following. Rabba Bar Bar Chana wanted to explain the Tosefta as follows. Hani Mili, when do we say that Stam alone is 30 days? B'milva B'shtar. If the guy made a shtar, made a document, a IOU, whatever, credit
promissory note,
and they wrote out a promissory note, and the promissory note didn't say the term. I, Shmerel, lending Beryl $1,000. And he doesn't, today, April 27th, whatever.
To be paid back.
But he doesn't say how long the term is. So when do we say that a stam loan is 30 days? When you wrote a shtar. Why? To lo ovid inish de tarach, a person isn't going to go through the trouble because of shtar to write a document, but sir mital sin yomim, for a loan that's going to be less than 30 days. In other words, if you're going to lend them for only a week, what do you write a shtar for? Maybe someone's going to forget, right? But if it's such a short period of time, what are you bothering to write a shtar? It's a big hassle to go get a piece of parchment and get some ink and get some witnesses to sign. It's a big deal. So you know what? If it's a short loan, the guy wouldn't go through the trouble. The fact that the guy is going through the trouble, by definition, we understand that it's going to be for at least 30 days. So when the Tosefta said, Stam alone is 30 days, says Rabba Bar Bar Chana, it only applies if you wrote out a document. Aval, Milval, Pet. What if it's only a verbal loan? Lo. Then it could even be less than 30 days. The clutch be less than 30 days. That was his statement. That's what Rabba Bar Chana said in front of Rav. Now Rav heard that and he responded to him. Omar le Rav. Rav says, Hochi Omar Chavivi. This is what my beloved said. Who is his beloved? It was his uncle, Rabbi Chia. Okay, Rabbi Chia was the brother of Rav's father. So Rav is responding, says so. So Rabba Bar Bar Chana, you said a statement. I'm going to tell you what my uncle said. And I guess he agrees with it. He says, doesn't matter if the guy lends with a document. Doesn't matter if he lends verbally. It's the same thing. It's 30 days. Is it 30 days only when a shtar is written? Or even if a shtar, or even if it's verbalized, is it going to be 30 days? Okay. Now, Tanya Nami Hochi, and we have a brisa that supports this last point. It says clearly. Now the Tosefta wasn't clear. That's where the debate was. But a brisa says clearly, Hamavas Chaveros Stam, if a person lends a guy without any specific time frame, Ein reshay letavo, he can't claim from him pachas mishloshim yom, less than 30 days. Echad amav b'shtar, whether it's lending it with a document, vechad amav peh, whether it was verbally, it's that way. So that's a proof to Rav, his uncle's opinion, that it doesn't matter no matter what, if it's not specified, it's always 30 days and not less. Okay. Now, that's finished that point. But while we're on the talk of 30 days, there's one last thing we'd like to know. Where in the world do we get this law from that it's 30 days? Why not 10 days? 60 days?
Bryce?
Where did Bryce get it from? Where did they get it from? They have to have some biblical source, no? You can't just stop make it up in your mind. We agree that's the law. We're not going to argue. So the rabbi who authored the Tosefta, the author who authored the Brisa, so like what was the reason for 30 days? So Omer le Shmuel le Rav Masna. So Shmuel says to Rav Masna, lo teisiv akarecha, I don't want you sitting down on your legs. I mean, I don't want you to sit comfortably. Ad demefarash the law lahashmaita, until you will explain this halacha, which is minoha milsa. Where did they get this thing? The Omer Rabbona, that the rabbis say that amal v'schavera stam, that if you lend a person without specifying the time, ein rishay l'tova b'chas n'lamed yom, that you can't collect within 30 days. Echad amal v'bishtar v'echad amal v'peh, regardless if it was through a document or it was verbally. Where did he get this side? Where did the Tosefta get it from? Where did the Brisa get it from? What's the Torah source? There's got to be some, at least a hint of the Torah, something to tell us this. So Amar Lei, he says, I'll tell you where it's from. It's from the laws of Shemitah. When Shemitah tells us when the 7 years come up, that the loan gets, you can't collect the loan. So look carefully at the words now. The words say, Korva Shnas Hasheva, when the 7th year begets close, Shnas Hashmita, the year of Shmita. Is there a little redundancy over there? I mean, when is the year of Shmita?
7th year.
So just say when the Shmita gets close. Yeah. More asks, Mimashmer Shenemar, can't we understand from the fact that it says, Korva Shnas Hasheva, the 7th year is coming close, Eini Yodea Shehi Shnas Shmita? Don't I know that this is the Shmita year? What are you telling me something? Why are you repeating it? Must be to tell us another insight.
The definition of close.
Ela ma Talmud lomar shnas hashmita. So why does it have to tell us the extra words shnas hashmita? Lomar lach, to teach you, yesh shmita acheres shehi kezo. That there's another shnas hashmita. There's another type of existential Shemitah, like this one of the 7-year Shemitah, that's also called a year. In other words, when the 7th year comes, that's one thing that will knock it off. And when there's also a Shnasa Shemitah, when there's a year of Shemitah, where it's not the same year of Shemitah, but it's like another kind of year of Shemitah. In other words, like two kinds of Shemitah years. What do you mean two kinds of Shemitah? The only one that I know, every 7 years is Shemitah. Yo, well, that's true, so why didn't it just say when the 7th year comes? Why the word Shnas HaShemitah? Why do you have to repeat the words a Shemitah year? Shemitah, what does Shemitah literally mean? To relinquish, to knock off, right?
No, whatever.
So why do you have to tell me another form of annulment? It already says the 7th year. To teach you there's another conceptual knockoff year. And what is that? Ve'ezu. What is this other conceptual type of Shemitah? Hamalvas chaveira stam. When a guy lends a fellow without making any qualifications. Shein reshay letavo v'pachas mishloshim yom. Because he can't collect within 30 days. This is the expert saying that with it, just like when Shemitah comes, you can't collect from the guy. So also within 30 days, within 30 days is like Shemitah. Not 100% like Shemitah. It doesn't mean after 3 days you can't ever collect it. But just like in the Shemitah you can't collect. Okay, and then you can't collect even later. But similarly, in the 30 days, you can't collect within the 30 days. But of course you can collect later, but you can't. In other words, there's a time, just like in the Bible, that you cannot collect at a certain time. It's called the 7th year. So there's two extra words, Shnasa Shemitah, means conceptually, there's another kind of year, where there's the concept of Shemitah, which means you cannot collect, And what is that? 30 days. But wait a minute. The 30 days is not a year. The Torah says, Shnas HaShemitah, a Shemitah year. 30 days is not a year, or maybe it is considered a year. You know, just like you're going to take a shave on Lag BaOmer in the morning, even though it's not a full 33 days, we have a principle that say half part of a day is like a whole day. So there's a concept also, part of a year is like a whole year. How much of a part do you need to be considered like a whole year?
30 days.
We're going to see in a minute, there's a halacha that in certain areas, 30 days is considered like a year. Oh, so now we have another kind of Shemitah, we have Sheva, when the 7 years comes close, and then there's a Shnasa Shemitah, there's a year of relinquishment, and what's that? That's 30 days. How do we know this? The Omar Mar, because the master said, Shloshim Yom Bashana, Chashuv Shana, that 30 days within a year is called a year. What is that pertaining to? If the laws of Orla, we know that when you plant a sapling, for 3 years you cannot benefit from the sapling at all. Now, is that three times 365 days? Or is it three, we'll call agricultural years, which starts from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah? So what happens if the guy, let's say, plants it on Erev Rosh Hashanah? So you say, well, one day the old year is over, and now I got another year and another year. So we only say it's 2 years and one day. Forget it, buddy. You got to go into another year and get a whole third year. But if you plant it 30 days before Rosh Hashanah, it is called one whole year. There has to be a point. You know, you're going to say it's always going to be three years plus. Right? So in other words, so there's this idea that, you know, as long as you're 30 days before the year ends, as it were, right? Then we already consider that like a one whole year. 30 days is considered like one whole year. Now I wait another year. So really it was 2 years and 30 days. On the 31st day, you could start taking the fruit and take through Yerushalayim and eating Yerushalayim. So we see halakhically where 30 days could be called a year. So now, what's he saying? That's the hint in the Torah that there's another time frame in which collection is forbidden. Again, the Torah says, Karva Shnas HaSheva, the seventh year is coming close. You're not going to be able to collect. Why does it add the words, Shnas HaShemitah, the year of Shemitah? We know it's the year of Shemitah. It must be there's another type of quasi-Shemitah, another year of Shemitah, meaning Shemitah means you can't collect. There's another type you can't collect, and that's the 30-day Stam loan you cannot collect. And that's the hint in the Torah to that halacha. Okay.
So does that mean after 6 years and 30 days, it becomes the Shemitah year? Like, does that?
No, because the Shemitah year is independent of that. Shemitah year has nothing to do with when you plant the tree. It's the cycle of the calendar.
I see.
And the Shemitah year starts on Rosh Hashanah. And now that's Rosh Hashanah. So you don't have to keep anything 7 years. It's the 7 year ends all loans. Has nothing to do with this. Here, it's a tree being planted. When did you plant the tree? It depends when you put it. Yeah.
Is this the same 30 days that I've heard about that you cannot, with regards to building a sukkah? Is it the same that you shouldn't build it 30 days?
No,
you can build it 30 days before sukkahs, but you shouldn't do it 30 days.
You can build it before. You have to have kavana. That would not be the same. It's not the same concept. Not the same concept.
Rabbi,
okay.
Is there anything to learn from where it says, do not sit down on your feet?
It's just an expression.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe there's something mystical. Does your article say anything about it?
Don't rest.
It's just an expression. Don't get comfortable, you know.
Yeah.
Till you explain me the pshat, you can't get comfortable. Okay, now another small little halacha. So we have nothing to do with Zomim today. Like, mama, she's all off the track. So we had a few statements, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, from yesterday and today. We started today with Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, right? And then we had, Rabbi Yehuda obviously was a student of Rav and Shmuel. So now we're going to get a couple's Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuels. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, he said the name of Rav, all's got a new area of the world now. Haposeach Beisat Saver B'Shabbos. If a person opens the hole of a shirt on Shabbos. In other words, in the olden days, the material of the shirt, it was closed on the top completely. There was no neck. So what do they do? The way the material was made, it was folded over, whatever, and that was your toga, your garment. So what do you do next? Now you make a hole. You take a knife and you make a hole, and now you've got the neck for the shirt. So now, what if you do that activity on Shabbos? Okay? Ha-paseach beis ha-tzavar v'Shabbos. If you open up the neck part of a shirt on Shabbos, now remember, it was like totally, like just like a piece of material, complete one sheet, let's say like that. Totally one piece of material. Just bent over. So you're taking a knife and your mommy's making a hole out of this. So what's the halacha chayiv chatas? You'd have to bring a sin offering. Because what have you done? You have completed the utensil. The shirt was not usable. By making the hole, we had this in the Rambam, I'm sure. When you make a hole in it, you have now created the final part, and now it is a usable utensil, which is like makah b'patish, right? You can't do that on Shabbos. You put the final blow. One of the 39 prohibited activities on Shabbos is to render something to be a usable utensil. And now, you're chayv chatas. To which Mora says, hold on there. Maskiv love Rav Kahana. So Rav Kahana asks a question. Am Rav Yehuda Amarav. V'chima ben zeh lemegufas chavish. Wait a minute. How is this different than the part of a barrel that we do to cover up the top of the barrel? Not the lid. You know, when they had barrels of wine, they'd put, pitch. Whatever, you know, the stuff on the top.
The seal.
Not the cork, but the seal. Right? Right. They put whatever materials, pitch, whatever, tar, whatever, and they'd smear it up at the top. You had a barrel that was an open barrel. It was an open barrel, right? And now you put the wine in, then you smeared the tar over it. And he says, how is that different than the tar over a barrel, which we know the halacha is? That if you would take your knife and cut the top of the tar off, you are not chayiv. So how is it different than when you're opening up the hole of the shirt, you're saying you are chayiv achatas, and we know the halacha when you have a pitcher, and you cut off the top of the seal of the pitcher, you're not chayiv. So what's the difference? Omar Lei, he says, zeh chibur, v'zeh eina chibur. This is attached, and this is not attached. What does that mean? The shirt, what was the shirt? The shirt was completely one piece of material. There was no even hint to an opening of that shirt. You now have created the entire new opening from anew. And that is mamish, a brand new activity that was done, and now you've made it usable that way.
Changed its function.
Right? The shirt never had a hole. You are creating the hole. On the other hand, over here, the barrel always had a hole. The only thing the tar is, it's a temporary hole covering that's meant to be removed. It was put there with the intention to stay till you want to take it off, and obviously it was meant to be taken off. So therefore it was never really fully connected in an inherent way. So all you're doing is removing something that was only temporary put on to make sure that bugs or flies don't get into it, doesn't spill. But it wasn't like one piece of material. It was something externally connected to that. So that has all kinds of implications in halacha. So therefore, for example, it's a lot different, for example, taking a can off of a lid where the lid of the can is part of the can as opposed to just opening up the bottle cap of a soda bottle. Mm. Because inherently there's a difference there. The can, it's one piece of metal. Mm-hmm. It's one piece of metal, right? And there's nothing there originally making it that it's not connected to that. It's totally connected to that. On the other hand, if you just have something that's over the thing, you know, it was put on later, that's meant to be taken off afterwards. That's why there'll be, I'm not saying that's the halacha necessarily, but you could see where there'll be more leniency in such a case, where inherently it's another object that was placed on it, versus something that it was one entire object the whole time, and now you're trying to make it opening in that. That's why there'll be more leniency in the other case
obsessed. Well, it's like a pre-cut, like a can of sardines where you pull
that's
it
what I was thinking.
So again, if certain things are made in a way that it's meant to be taken off.
Pull tab.
Right?
Yeah.
Like a pull tab, there's much more room to be lenient.
Right.
Much more room to be lenient.
Right.
I mean, there's ways around every case, but you have to do much more in other cases with the can. You have to totally destroy the can.
Right.
When you don't have to do with a ring pull thing, you don't have to totally destroy it. Yep. So you're much more lenient for that. Okay, perfect.
That's the same thing.
That's what we did in the Rambam.
That's the same as opening
the can. That was an extra piece of material put in. It was a hole punched ready to make it go through.
Oh, no, it depends. No. When you have the thing, it's just make triangles. It's one can. There's nothing pre-cut.
That's different.
That's different.
If it's a can, you have to open it from the top and the bottom.
And destroy the can.
You got to destroy the can. That's different. I'm destroying it. But just to open up the top, you can't do that.
To get the tune out.
And bottom.
Just the top, you can't do. You got to destroy it. So I do the top and bottom at the same time. Then it's okay. On the other hand, just taking off the top of a soda pop thing, the cap, there's much more room to be lenient because it was never part of the original thing.
But you write a seal on it.
That's already lots more room to be lenient. Good place to stop. The next area is totally a new world. It is about mikvahs. And that's going to carry us all the way to the Mishnah. So
the witnesses coming back?
Witnesses come back on the next mission.
It's
only because we brought statements of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel that Rav Masna asked questions on the fair. Let's throw them all in over here. All right, give me.